And I'm going to share my screen. Hopefully everyone can see my shared screen and my presentation that's coming through and is live on your screens for you to see as well in terms of from a slide perspective. So structuring training sessions with SNC, and I think it's so important that for me, in terms of where I am in my career, in terms of the track and field coaches or football coaches, rugby coaches, netball coaches, hockey coaches, SNC coaches. I just think we're all SNC coaches fundamentally in terms of what we're putting together. It just we have different specialisms, whether they would be the technical tactical side, whether it lends towards the speed development component, the movement mechanics side, or the gym programming. But ultimately, we are all SNC coaches, and it's important for us to recognize how we can put this together in a way so training is productive for all athletes. And what we all know and would have come across is this playground to podium analogy. And we know that understanding robustness as well as physical preparation and how this supports performance plays a critical role. And what I'm not going to talk about today in the presentation is about fundamental patterns, push, pull, double leg, single leg, twist, as you've probably had. I don't know how many talks, discussions, webinars, conferences, coaching workshops that you've been to that's covered all of these aspects. And when we start to look at all of these different ways in which we can program, it's clear that track and field coaches have a good understanding of this. And we know that these familiar primal patterns of squat, lunge, push and pull and hinging play a critical role in performance. But something which I want you to consider is about the speed power profile, like a force velocity curve. But the speed power profile, in terms of we rank what we would have from an output perspective, an energy system development side, where short duration, high intensities, they would sit and as we are facing the graph towards the left, whereas the further we go across, to the right, time increases, but the speed power output decreases. So our long endurance events would sit on the right-hand side of the graph, whereas a shot put, javelin throw, discus thrower, sprinters, they would sit on that left-hand side of the graph. And we can undulate our programming through a training week where we target those high intensity bursts of training sessions, whereas then followed by a long duration, low intensity. And then the body is allowed to recover, going through its systematic process to aid that recovery, which allows for that adaptation. And then we can start that cycle again. And that would be an approach that's put across over a 7-day period, applied with a track and field world, within the football world, within the rugby world, within the netball and hockey world. So, in terms of myself, as you may well know, my name is Gareth Walton, and I've worked along a large range of sports, from football to track and field to rugby. Worked with a company called Exos for many years, worked for England Athletics as a full-time employee, and had a wide range of experiences of working in different cultures as well across the world, and seeing how different things have done in terms of put together. But one aspect that really stands out to me in terms of from my travels and what I've been on is this art of coaching in terms of how we need to be able to join things together so we are able to influence that change. And if we have a look at and compare a coach to a mechanic, what's the difference? If you could type some answers in the chat just to give you 2 minutes. So, what's the difference between a mechanic and a coach? Okay, so the mechanic, he will fix a problem, put it right using some tools, and it's a simple process through a logical sequence of steps where we know the car is broken. He's going to put, change that part, and then the car can then run back as it was before it was broken. Whereas in terms of with the coach, we've got to deal with many, many other factors, not just in terms of it's a simple, that's not right. We need to do this to put it right. We need to understand the individual so we know what he needs to do, how he's going to learn, so we can then set them up then for success in terms of in that performance arena, which becomes a challenge as we all have different ways in which we learn through either verbal, either by seeing or actually by doing. And this is where, the art and the science of coaching come together in terms of how they're going to join so we can facilitate that learning process for the individual to actually become a better performer, feel cared for, inspired to be able to work towards their goal in terms of what that they have. And that may be to become an Olympian. It may be just to beat a competitor that they've been trying to for the last few years. Or it can just be, and there's nothing wrong with this, just they want to get better, improve their personal performance. So what we're going to look at is review some dominant theories about motor control and motor learning, and introduce something I'm going to that I've picked up from my travels within Exos would be about a technical model. So what's the technical excellence? Where's the error? And then how are we going to actually go about coaching that so we can correct act the actual dysfunctional movement patterns that are going on. And then provide an outline of methods by which we can optimize the learning environment of the training sessions. And if we can do that from an S&C perspective, but also from the technical tactical side that we are coaching, we can then influence on a large scale how that athlete will develop. So in terms of from a motor control perspective, what do we mean by this and what is it? Well, we've got the generalized motor programming theory, and this is based on a memory-based construct. So we've got four considerations: the initial conditions, what program to use, the sensory consequences of the program, task intrinsic, and the outcome of the program, so the knowledge of the result. And it's important for us to actually understand here that everyone is going to have a starting point in terms of where they are able to complete certain movements. And then we're actually going to put this into a program in terms of how they are able to move. And then those consequences, in terms of from a sensory side, is what are they able to perceive and understand in terms of from those movement aspects. And then the outcome of the program, so knowledge based of results. Do we know what's going to come from that? And then we can influence that change. And then, in terms of a dynamic systems theory, so we've got movement patterns arise based on contextual constraints, cooperation, a coordination of multiple body systems, okay, so attractor states in terms of what's happening here. So, skill acquisition. Motor learning and how we are actually going to set this together in terms of to allow this to happen. So there's a couple of key things that we need to be aware of in terms of this dynamic systems theory. We have the environment, we have the organism, we have the task. So the individual, the organism would be the individual that we are coaching or the group of individuals. How are we going to set the environment up with those tasks that we want them to complete? And it's critical for us to actually be setting the task that's going to challenge the organism, but does the environment allow us to set up those tasks that we wish to program? And the environmental impactors are going to be based around all of the sensory input that's going on in terms of for that individual. So task specific is what we're aiming to set up here. So we're going to get so much sensory input. So we know that we are able to pick up with sensory feedback in terms of from our eyes, what's going on that we see from a sound perspective, a touch, a feel perspective. So in terms of programming, what the individual can will understand in terms of what we are actually executing within our environment. So the environment encompasses all things related to the environment in which the client athlete is performing. Of course, that includes environmental factors, but also sensory input, what the client or athlete sees, feels, hears, tastes, and task-specific environmental pieces. For example, the hurdle height, for example. Well, although it could be an example of a task-based constraint. So what we can set within that task would be specific rules and boundaries and goals for them to actually achieve within that session, and then long term as we progress over that session. And then in terms of for the organism wise, which would be the athlete, the client, in terms of that we're coaching, it will be, we're going to then arrange everything based around position, pattern, and power. So if we think of position relates to mobility and stability, pattern works with the sequencing, the coordination, the rhythm in terms of going through the movement. And then the power would be that expression of force that we're able to push into the ground or release into and implement to fire it as far as possible. So can we, and if I go back, set our training environment so we are basing the tasks that we are set in the athlete, for example, hurdle height, and then taking into consideration the environment so they are able to get lots of feedback in terms of what they're able to do within that task based around position, pattern, and power. So in terms of the skill acquisition and refinement, so we've got the motor learning models, three examples here proposed. We've got Fitz and Posner three-stage model, cognitive, associative, and autonomous. And ultimately, we want autonomous athletes. We've got the Newell three-stage model, coordination pattern, corporate coordinative structure, and then optimization of control. And then the Birch four-stage model of unconsciously unskilled, consciously unskilled, consciously skilled, unconsciously skilled. And this would be where we go through that progressive approach of we are starting with a novice and we are developing them into being an expert. Okay, and ultimately, we want our athletes that we are all coaching to be autonomous. They have optimization of their control in terms of through their movement. They are unconsciously skilled. They don't think to actually execute those skills. They are done automatically. So my challenge to you as coaches, and this is where my bit about structuring our S&C. The S&C, the strength and conditioning component, where sometimes track and field coaches, we have a practitioner that we work with who would be an S&C coach, and they are programming the gym site. Does that slot in alongside what you are doing as a track and field coach with the technical, tactical side of developing that athlete to be able to perform on the track? Yes, we will get improvements in terms of their strength output, their strength gains, maybe their conditioning side as well. But is it allowing the athlete to become a better motor enhanced individual where they are then driving along to that unconsciously skilled individual? And that will be something for you to consider in terms of, are you linking with that S&C coach? Are you having input in terms of what they are prescribing, and are they rationalizing why it's been programmed within the sessions and how they slot together? Are there components from the S&C session that slots in with the track delivery sessions? or field-based sessions. So that motor learning, what is the difference between a novice and an expert? What is the difference between the two? Well, we've talked about the unconscious skilled. They're very refined in what they're able to do, and they're able to do it exceptionally well. Whereas the novice may need lots of description on how to do it. And a good way for us to think about in terms of we drive to work, it's a new job that we start, it's a new place where we live, and we go into a new track and field center for a competition, and we put in the coordinates on the GPS. On day one, we follow that GPS religiously about what it's saying, what it's telling us in terms of when to slow down, what's ahead, the roundabout, the lights, when to turn left, when to turn right. Whereas by day 21, when we go into the same place and we've done that consecutive days, we don't use the GPS anymore. We've learned that route. We've even actually refined it where we know where there are shortcuts, where there is ease in terms of being able to navigate through to get to that venue, which is allowing us to get there more efficiently. We're doing it without much thought. We know what's ahead, and it's an automatic response. And this would be, at first we've got that attention to the fine descriptors that are coming out, but we've learned them. So the attention is a finite resource. Yeah, the novice and expert allocate differently in terms of when we are without the GPS, we're looking at environmental cues. Yeah, it's self-talk in terms of how we're actually moving to that goal, to that venue that we travel into. And we're looking at cues to actually help support that we're going in the right direction without the GPS to actually get to that venue. And this would be in terms of from a coaching perspective. Well, now we could argue in terms of we have Nick Winkelmann here working with an athlete. They've got the mini bands. They're using that to drop into the athletic base position, something that we could prescribe as an SNC coach, but also we could use that as the track and field coach. And to help our clients and athletes attain mastery by moving them along the continuum from novice to expert, that would be our coaching goal. It's important for us to be able to break down simple patterns that the athlete needs to execute, yeah, from complex movements. So we're looking at those, what are these simple patterns that we can draw out so then we're able to build up that repertoire of those complex movements. And we know that coaching is teaching, yeah, teaching is coaching. So we want to build a way in which our athletes are going to be effective to learn within the training sessions. Okay, whether that would be the S&C or whether that would be the track and field sessions. Yeah, and we know that teaching is all about learning. And to be effective as a teacher, what we need to be able to do is establish ways in which the athletes are able to make connections. And once they make connections, then we go in deep into that memory construct of when they are learning about how things fit together in terms of what they're able to execute. So connections cannot be made without the opportunity to make decisions. So we need to be setting up the environment without tasks so they're able to make decisions, so they're able to then make those connections. And this is what happens if you use your GPS every day you go to work. You would follow exactly what is said on there, turn left, turn right. But as time goes on, what we've been able to do is make connections based on cues, tasks, stimulus that we've seen, and then allow us to then make decisions. Okay, so if we relate to the technical model, which I referred to earlier. So, a technical model, what the movement should look like. That will be the expert. So, us as the coach, do we understand what excellence is
in relation to, if I draw on sprinting, the first 10 meters of acceleration. We have an understanding of what that movement should look like. What should be happening when the athlete is rotating around within the circle before they're going to release the discus? How are they pivoting off the inside foot to then aid that rotation? So what the movement does look like, that would be the aero part, the actual performance of the individual. So we know what the A grade standard is, and then we can actually relate this to what we actually see in the performance of our athlete. And then becomes the challenge for us as coaches, how to correct the movement. Do we need to use verbal cues, or do we need to use non-verbal cues? And when I mean with the non-verbal, does that comes down to then what we put in place with the individuals in terms of from a programming perspective with the tasks. And an example here would be the two-arm, one-leg Romanian deadlift. So technically wise, we want neutral spine, pelvis parallel to the floor, error, spinal flexion, stance leg, hip abduction. So in terms of from a corrective component, how can we put this right? So correction, verbal, stay long, non-verbal, foam roll on the back at the bottom. Whereas hip hinge, limited range of movement at the knee. So the error, posterior pelvic tilt, excessive range of movement at the knee. We can ask them to reach backwards as a verbal cue, or we could have a half a super band over the other part of the foot, and then the opposite shoulder. So it's like slinging across the body, and that'll allow us then to get them to have some feedback in terms of what's happening, so we maintain tension on that band. Cohesive sequencing, concentric initiation via glutes. So we've got that will be the technical about what we want to happen. So we've got the error, loss of balance, concentric initiation by spinal stabilizers. So we could, from a verbal side, ask them to push the ground away. From a non-verbal, a 3 second concentric tempo. So we're asking them to go through a 3 second movement in terms of when their hip hinges. Okay, and some of these patterns in terms of going through that single leg RDL will relate to what we want in terms of from the athlete, from if I would say an acceleration side, are they able to hip hinge? Are they able to stay long and strong from floor to ground in terms of body position? So anyone can see what's wrong. And that would be from a technical side. We'd be able to pick up errors from a gym lifting perspective. But the challenge is, it takes a coach to know how to make it better. How are we going to put that right? And this will come down to this autonomy-driven approach. So the self-determination theory, three basic needs of an organism. Relatedness, competence, and then autonomy. The self-determination theory says that social animals have three basic psychological needs, and that those are for relatedness, yeah, to a group, competence in being able to interact with the group, and then autonomy in being able to self-direct. And this would be a great way in terms of setting the athletes up in terms of they're able to relate to that environment, they're able to then have the chance to be set up to become competent, and which is giving them autonomy. And then, just in terms of a phrase for us, a statement, innate psychological nutriments that are essential for ongoing psychological growth, integrity, and well-being. And this is about us setting the environment up for great well-being for the athletes in terms of that learning aspect. And if we look at the relatedness, sharing of social factors in relationships between two or more people, such as trust and empathy. So our sessions are being arranged in a way that that allows them to have trust in terms of what's been programmed, but also in terms of empathy, of understanding possibly what their challenges may be. The competence side, the ability to get along and interact and work with others. So the S&C coach side, the technical tactical side, the two coaches are interacting with each other. That feeds into the athletes seeing and actually experiencing what's happening with the two working together, which allows then for the two to be aligned with each other in terms of what we are programming. The athletes are able to make their own decisions in terms of what's being prescribed from them. Do they have input in terms of what's being prescribed within the training sessions? Are they having input in terms of what's happening within those training sessions? So they're having a decision in terms of the course of what the way in which their life is going forward. So in terms of our training perspective, from a structure, involvement and autonomy. So the structure side, a consistent session structure can provide the environment necessary to support the client athlete's competence. The involvement with the coach and others can increase their relatedness in terms of what's been programmed. And then allowing clients and athletes to make some decisions can enhance in terms of their involvement within the session and what they're going to get from the session. And my question to you as coaches, how many of you ask the athletes what they feel they need within their training sessions? What do they need from the S&C side that's going to support their track work or field work? And that sets us up really for me in terms of how we're then going to be able to influence what happens from the speed power profile perspective. Because of the ultimately, we want to raise the speed power profile up, that is from left to right or right to left, whichever way you want to describe this. Because if we are able to lift the speed power profile up, because all the energy systems are interacting with each other, we are then in a great place to enhance performance. And whether they are speed power based programs, athletes, or endurance based athletes, the three will all interact with each other from the gym perspective, but also from doing low intensity, long duration work from a sprinter side. But it's how we program those that they will all slot together. So, my question to all of you would be, we program weekly, monthly, yearly. We program in terms of from the perspective of our energy system development, the gym side, working with an S&C coach. But how often do we include within the gym programming, the track and field side, what sort of cues that we're going to use with our athletes from a verbal or non-verbal side? So we're actually allowing the athlete to learn and able to make connections so they're able to then understand how to do those movements, but they become autonomous movers. That is, they're able to then self-correct when they're not able to execute those movements well, efficient, in the performance arena side. Because there'll be times when we, the coach, are not able to put those right. We aren't there whether as soon as they go to the starting blocks or they enter into the field area, that becomes the time when the athlete is by themselves. We want them to be able to put right what they may not have been able to execute. And that will come from us, from how we are programming, whether that would be from the perspective of queuing, through coaching, the language that we use. And it's so important that for me, the SNC is structured in a way that is complementing and enhancing what we are programming from a track perspective. So, in terms of to pull things together, the goal is to teach the athletes. We can do that through structure, involvement, and autonomy. And then for us as the coach, it'll be honing the coaching eye will help us direct towards what to say. So as long as we understand what is a good movement, a lateral lunge, for example, a single leg RDL, these are things that we would be putting into the warm-up perspective if they're just through the primal movement patterns. But they would be lifts that they may be doing in the gym. Knowing about feedback and instruction will give direction on when to give it. So how are we clear and we're programming in, particularly when we're going through our micro phases in our meso cycle, week one, maybe the first week of loading, the second week, a progressive loading approach again, the third week, it's even more progressive. Then we come to our unloading. Are we putting into our training sessions lots of times where we can actually give effective cognitive feedback to the athlete? Are we consciously aware that when we really are overloading the athletes in a heavy loading week, that in terms of feedback wise, we may be limited in terms of what the athlete is able to take on board? So in terms of structuring that SNC side, mine will be, are we able to structure the sessions from a cognitive learning side with the SNC to complement that, and then also in terms of from the physical output perspective. And then there's some references for you all that I feel would be very useful to look at and follow. One in particular, I'll draw on Daniel Coyle's The Talent Code. Greatness isn't born, it's grown. Talks about in terms of that neural motor programming side of rehearsal, doing things, learning them through self-discovery, but also through that approach of utilizing the self-determination theory. Very interesting in terms of what comes out of there. And elite athletes, in his opinion, they are developed, they're not born. Any questions from anyone? In terms of what I've shared, I've tried to put this in a different way, whether it's a hit or a miss, I'm unsure. In terms of instead of we going through that approach of structuring squat, hip, hinge, brace, push, pull, in terms of thinking about how we are using that art of S as a coach to be able to put things together from a delivery perspective of us. From a programming side where we have the track work, we have the gym work, circuit side, mobility work, in terms of how we are describing and explaining this, but how does it fit in terms of the support from a task with the environment for ultimately the organism, which is the athlete that we are developing. Any questions?
As some people asking some questions in the Q&A, I'll just type the responses. I had one question where someone has asked about the ideal number of SNC sessions or work in a week, and ideally, what we want to get the athlete to it would be they're doing two or three. If we were to say SNC gym sessions a week, but obviously at first, that's going to be too much for the individual. So it's about being progressive in our approach. So it could be one session a week for a considerable period of time, and then it's increased to two, and then builds up then towards three. But that it's really important that we recognize that it needs to fit around the athlete in terms of what availability they have. And I've really emphasize again that the link between you, the coach, and the track and field world connects with that SNC coach, because there could be things that you could take away from the SNC coach that can be slotted in within your delivery, within your track and field sessions, that supports the athlete. And that would be from the learning perspective of how the two slot together for the athlete to be able to make those connections. Good question as well. Thank you, Fiona. Any more questions?
Well,
Excuse me. Okay, as I haven't got any more questions from people, I'll bring the session to a close, and
Thank you for your time this evening. Hopefully it's given you some things to consider and take away with you in terms of what you're doing from a track and field coaching perspective and how you can implement that within your training sessions.